For the Army's Enterprise Services Unit, IT has been a migration from unifying email to rationalizing many widely used services. Doug Haskin is the project director for Enterprise Services. He describes how Congress gave the whole effort a shot in the arm.
PDES was formed in 2012 as a result of the National Defense Authorization Act of that year. The law directed that the Army establish a formal acquisition program for the consolidation of enterprise services. So in January 2012, the Army Acquisition Executive directed the Program Executive Officer for Enterprise Information Systems, or PEOEIS, to establish a product director for enterprise email. The AAE also directed that the PEO establish a overall project director for all of enterprise services, with the product director for enterprise email reporting to the project director for enterprise services.
So it sounds like email might have been the original service, but since then many more have come into the portfolio.
That's right. Initially, it started off with enterprise email. We added two additional existing product offices from PEOEIS. They were Army Knowledge Online, or AKO, which many people are familiar with. At the time they were incorporated into ES, they offered email, single sign-on, common access card authentication, as well as file storage and other services for Army users. The other organization that we brought in was the Acquisition Logistics Technology Enterprise Systems and Services, or ALTES. They're located in Radford, Virginia, and they provide hosting services to Army and DoD customers.
So it sounds like you were ahead of the big cloud curve, almost.
Almost, yeah. Some of those services, like AKO, could really kind of be considered the first Army enterprise service and cloud offering.
And I remember when AKO was being formulated and so forth, the policy and then the contracts around it. What's the status of it today, by the way?
So right now, AKO is on tap to be replaced in the future by various enterprise services that we're onboarding right now. So the initial thing was enterprise email, and the Secretary of the Army in 2013 had provided guidance to begin doing this, starting with enterprise email. So last year, we finally finished the transition for enterprise email and turned off the AKO email capability. We also terminated the hosting services that AKO has been providing and transitioned those customers to other hosting providers that specialize in that. Some of the other things that AKO provides now, we're currently going through the analysis with the Army CIO G6 on how to best replace those. So things like chat, instant messaging, those types of activities are going to be replaced by the Unified Capabilities acquisition that we're working right now. And some of the other things like the file storage and collaboration capabilities, we have a pilot that's ongoing right now, sponsored by the G6, that we hope to kind of inform us on how we're going to replace those capabilities as well.
So this idea of unified communications is something that industry has been driving at for its own use for some time. Sounds like you want to get into that era, which also, I guess, in some way aids mobility too, doesn't it?
Yes, definitely. And we've been involved with mobility from the sense of supporting it with our help desk, the Army Enterprise Service Desk, as well as our enterprise email team, which has been supporting the BlackBerrys, primarily tied in mobility.
All right, so let's move on to the RFI that you have just completed for the Cloud Computing Enterprise Transformation. What are you driving at, and what have you gotten from industry now that might have shaped what it is that you hope to eventually acquire?
So in November of this year, we launched a draft request for proposal. We had actually conducted a request for information, RFI, earlier in the year in July, August timeframe, along with a cloud hosting contract vehicle industry day here at Fort Belvoir. So we got a lot of great feedback from that event and a lot of interest from industry, which is why we decided to start off the acquisition with a draft RFP to solicit input on that. Since it just recently closed, we don't have the analysis done with the contracting office, and I can't really share too much about the inner workings of the contracting process there. What I can say is one of the things we wanted to get feedback on was the approach to how we're going to acquire this, which we're looking at using a basic ordering agreement or BOA framework for this. It's very similar to a blanket purchase agreement that many people in the federal area are familiar with, but we think a BOA is better suited for the high dollar type of actions that are associated with hosting services. And BOA also provides more flexibility for adapting to uncertain requirements when you don't know all the requirements up front, which is the position we're in now. Keeping that flexibility is important for us in the Army, because we know that the guidance, policies, requirements for commercial cloud have been changing and they will continue to evolve. And we need something that is flexible enough to take us into the future. And I think it also benefits industry, because they know that when they put the resources into competing to be on this agreement, that it's flexible enough to stay viable and stay relevant into the future, and it won't end up being obsolete in a year or two.
So it sounds like you're looking for a multiple award type of situation where there would be more than one cloud provider competing for task orders down the line?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, and so I guess this kind of completes the transition of the military itself from DISA as the the cloud provider to each individual service being able to go its own route.
Yeah, and DISA is still in the mix as far as their MilCloud offering. The Army did release a cloud computing strategy in March of this year, and it describes an approach where you have a few different components, and where you would still have an on-premise component that's either managed by, either run by DoD or Army, but you'd also have an off-premise component. So it's multifaceted. It's not just a single all-or-nothing approach, which I know that's directions that have gone in the past, and I think we found over the years that it's best to take a more balanced approach and not put all your eggs in one basket, so to speak.
We're speaking with Doug Haskin. He is the Acting Project Director for Enterprise Services at the Army. And are you looking to host fairly critical applications, possibly in a commercial cloud? And do you have any pilots going that might test that feasibility?
Yes, we are looking into that. Where we've kind of settled now and working with the Army CIO G6 is trying to get the unclassified systems into the true commercial cloud off-premise. And the Army CIO G6 is working a pilot to establish an on-premise commercially provided cloud instance, and they're looking at Redstone Arsenal to do that. So the intent is to run that pilot, get some systems in there hosted that are sensitive, and we wouldn't want them going off-premise commercial cloud. Learn the lessons from that, and then use it in the future when we roll this concept out Army-wide.
And it might be a little bit premature, but would you be looking at, say, one of the cloud providers who has a government-dedicated data center for that cloud, or would you go so far as to maybe be in somewhere where, you know, some retailer or something could also be in that same cloud?
I think the way that we're heading is it's okay to have shared resources, shared areas, but there's got to be, depending on the impact level of the data, there's got to be a physical separation between them.
Sure. And by the way, we should also talk briefly about the email that we mentioned earlier. What is the current status of the email? What's the strategy there? That's cloud also, correct?
Right. So the Army has been using the DISA-provided enterprise email for a few years, and our office was, like you mentioned earlier, was initially stood up to do just that. That, I think, has been a tremendous success for the Army. So we've partnered very closely with DISA in providing that service and rolling it out. And if you look across the Army today, there's no longer individual email servers set up at installation or organizations. There's no longer different organizations using different email systems and clients. The AKO email has been completely terminated, but we were able to still resolve existing AKO email addresses to their corresponding DISA Enterprise email addresses. And we've got business processes in place that have been worked over the past few years with the G6 team and the rest of the Army to allow those commands to manage those accounts themselves.
And do you have metrics for the savings or, say, administrative savings or other cost savings that might have accrued because of consolidating all of this email into one cloud source?
Well, we've seen some different numbers, and there was an Army audit agency, I believe, review of this several years ago, and I don't have the numbers in front of me. It was projected to provide significant savings, and I think we're seeing, for the most part, significant savings with this.
All right, so let's move on to the bigger cloud issue, the bigger migration issue. Often these migrations are a chance to rationalize applications. Mm-hmm. And I think all of the armed services over the years have looked at applications and been wowed by the number they're actually hosting and using, or maybe hosting and nobody's using, but they sit there taking up resources. So tell us about the process for rationalizing apps before in kind of cleaning up all that situation before you do move more to the cloud.
Okay. Well, our office isn't directly responsible or involved in the rationalization process, but it is a very important process for us because we've been tasked to provide a Army application migration business office to assist those application owners in moving to the designated DoD or commercial hosting services. So really the importance of rationalization is that before that application even gets to us to assist, the domain leads, the domain managers need to make a decision on their systems and which ones are going to be terminated, which ones are going to be modernized, and which ones are going to be sustained as is until they're replaced by something else in the future. So once that rationalization decision has been made, those applications come to our office, the App Migration Business Office, or AMBO as we call it. After they come to AMBO, then the AMBO takes over and helps walk them through the rest of the process. We provide them an analysis of what their requirements truly are, not necessarily what they have on the ground right now, because sometimes they're not utilizing fully the footprint that they have. We also help them look at the various hosting alternatives and determine what the best solution is for them. And we also just provide general assistance to them along the way. We've also launched a new tool that we call AMPT, which is the Army Application Migration Pre-Assessment Tool, which is kind of a one-stop shop to help these customers get their information into the queue with AMBO. It standardizes the way the information is put in through drop-down menus and things like that, so it reduces the amount of back-and-forth communications that used to happen. Emails, telephone calls, spreadsheets sent back and forth, and gets the information in there in a way that helps us get to the analysis quicker. We understand that a lot of applications that have to migrate, some of them are older applications. They may be on life support, so to speak, and they may not have in their program offices the technical expertise that they need really to take this on themselves. So that's what AMBO is here to help with.
So it sounds like there's a template that you can use to help people do their rationalization, and it's not just left up to, well, this commander wants all of his apps to be kept, this one is ready to throw everything out the door. There is some rationale, some template basis for looking at apps.
Right, and really the domains do that themselves, and we haven't been too involved in that. We really get them after the rationalization has occurred and walk them through the rest of the process.
So you're prepared to take whatever load of applications they want to keep moving forward, you'll just take it on?
That's right. Yeah, to date we've supported about 380, little more than that, from 380 applications from about 40 different organizations across the Army. Now, we believe there are significantly more applications than that in the Army inventory, and we're working to try to set up a flow to bring them in an orderly manner so we don't end up getting flooded with 1,000 applications all at one time as we get closer to the September 2018 deadline for having these migrations done.
And do you ever get a situation where maybe the data related to an application might need to be preserved or somebody might want it, but the application itself, the logic, would not need to be preserved?
Well, we actually have that situation somewhat with AKO right now. As I mentioned earlier, we turned off the AKO email capability at the beginning of this calendar year in early 2015. And one of the challenges we had was we had to archive a lot of information to hold for future legal searches and things like that. So we've got a little bit of experience in doing that internally. We haven't had any applications through the AMBO come in that I know of and express that they had that same issue. We would, but if they do, we've got some expertise in-house on how we did that for AKO that we'd be happy to share.
And are we, in general, talking about capabilities that are in the logistics and support areas as opposed to tactical?
Primarily, yes. The intelligence systems are not included in this, as are most of the tactical systems are not included in this as well. But the systems that host their applications within data centers in the U.S. are yes.
And a moment ago, you said that you have some knowledge, expertise, experience in the whole area of migration. So talk a little bit more about that.
So as far as migrating and archiving old data?
Correct.
To be preserved?
I should say, yes, archiving.
Okay. Well, yeah, like I said, we've done it for AKO. Our AKO team has done that. And it's not something that we readily offer through AMBO. However, and like I said, I'm not sure if any customers have contacted AMBO asking about that specifically. But we would be able to assist users with that if they had that concern.
Okay, and I wanted to get back to unified communications because we touched on it earlier, but we didn't really get deep into it.
Sure.
And what is the Army's view of what unified communications is and how does it relate in terms of services and platforms? Because often the platforms and the services are integrated in some manner. Mm-hmm. So how does that all work?
So the Army is pursuing right now a soft client-based unified capabilities, as we're calling it. I know the generally industry refers to it as unified communications. Internally in the Army, we're calling it unified capabilities, but I think we mean pretty much the same thing. So we have defined this first increment of UC as being integrating voice, video, instant messaging, chat, and presence services for the Army. We've been working this for a while, really since day one of PDES's existence, and we're at the point now where we're really ready to start moving on getting the capability out there. The requirements are being finalized at the Army level with input from the major stakeholders, and we've conducted an industry day for this as well as a request for information to help focus our acquisition efforts. We're targeting a best-case release of a request for proposals by the end of FY16. We really think that the UC project has the potential to dramatically change the way the Army does business. And, you know, that's one of the reasons because of that scope is why it's taken a while to get to this point. Many users in the Army right now have these capabilities, but they're using local versions provided by their command or installation, which works fine for internal use, but it hinders the ability to talk to other organizations that are using different technologies or on different server farms, and it really prevents an enterprise-wide solution. So what we're trying to get to is a soft client that can be deployed without a significant investment in end-user equipment and quickly get a capability out there that that provides those services to the Army.
And you said increment one would have voice, video, chat, presence services. That's a pretty comprehensive portfolio. What would come in another increment?
Well, there are some things like email capability, a messaging capability, that we found are in most of the commercial offerings, and it ties back into the Defense Enterprise email capability that we get right now. As you know, there's the DISA is looking at the DEE 2.0, the next version of enterprise email, and looking at what goes into that, and we've been very involved with DISA's efforts there as well. It brings up questions as far as how do we integrate, if the commercial offerings include this messaging component that offers email, how and when do we include that in a single combined offering, or do we keep consuming a strictly kind of stovepipe email service from DISA in addition to our Army-provided UC capability, or do they combine together at some point in the future, and who's got the lead on that, Army or DISA? So these are questions that we're working through right now, and really as we come up on the Army acquisition of UC over the next year, as well as the DISA acquisition of the follow-on enterprise email capability, we'll have to address these.
We're speaking with Doug Haskin. He's Acting Project Director for Enterprise Services in the Army. And a lot of agencies are talking about this DevOps environment, moving to software development that is agile and so forth. Are services related to that kind of thing part of what you plan to offer maybe as enterprise services in the future?
Not so much as far as actually the development or anything like that, but we are working the common operating environment for the data center cloud generating force. And one of the objectives there is to get to a standardized environment that, that application owners can develop to make sure that they're compatible with any data center out there, whether it's a DISA data center, whether it's an Army data center, whether it's a commercially operated on-premise or off-premise cloud. We want a common operating environment that everyone can build to. So they're prepared to move wherever they need to.
So it's almost an API approach, if you will, application interface approach, as opposed to DevOps.
Yes, I'd agree. That's one way to look at it.
And what about other applications? I see that HR, for example, is something that you're looking at to provide across the Army. What are some of the enterprise applications at that level, business-type applications that you're contemplating?
Our organization is not involved in the actual application side of the HR. Where we're involved is our organization that just joined us in October of this year called Human Resources Solutions. And what HR Solutions does is very similar to the other organization we picked up in October, which is PD Chess for computer hardware, enterprise software, and solutions. Chess provides enterprise-wide contracts for Army and DoD use to obtain hardware, software, and IT services. And HR Solutions provides that same type of framework, providing IDIQ contracts for Army and DoD users to get HR support from. So HR Solutions is the one organization in ours, in ES, that doesn't have a specific IT mission, but they do have an enterprise services mission to provide HR solutions for the Army. So that's how they fit into ES.
And so is that strictly on the civilian side, or would that also be service members, uniformed?
It's all.
So as this organization develops and grows and adds more services, what are the kinds of people and skills you're looking for to keep the enterprise services going and vital?
Well, one of the big areas that we need good people in is the contracting area. We've got an abundant amount of smart IT people, and I think lots of people would agree that IT is the technical part is, I don't want to say easy, but that's the part where solutions, we have very smart people that are working that, and they can come up with technical solutions for anything. Where we really run into, and I mean, I think we as a whole kind of run into, in my opinion, is the contracting area, making sure we get our requirements captured correctly, make sure we're using the right types of vehicles that are appropriate to the actions we're trying to complete. And I think we're improving greatly in those areas just over the last few years that ES has been in existence. And that's one of the areas that I think we still have room to improve in.